first of the grand final for the Lions.
McCarthy from 48. Beautiful kick from McCarthy. Miracle goal. What a goal from Bailey. That'll fire him up. Look at it explode.
Here's Cameron with his first wheel. Look at it. And he doesn't need much. Fletcher flicks it forward. Robertson. Danaher. Goal. Brisbane.
McCarthy. That's magnificent. He drills it.
The kick from Archie. How good. Goal, Brisbane. Charlie Cameron just couldn't trap it. Still keeps his feet and kicks a goal. The Lions are in front.
The Brisbane Lions fan cast on what should be one of the better days of our lives has turned into a bit of an empty, hollow feeling. Patrick, you're a bigger and stronger man than I am. You've since watched the replay of the 2023 AFL Grand Final. I haven't yet, and if I'm honest, I'm not sure I'll ever have it in me to do so, regardless of whether it was or wasn't the greatest Grand Final of all time. Maybe I'll get around to it one day, and maybe my perspective will change, but for now, ouchie.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't much better on replay. Like, it's still... still bloody hurt, didn't it?
At least you did it. And listeners that have tuned in so far will know that normally, if we lose, I try and include at least a couple of highlights from the opposing team in the montage at the start, just to give people an idea of how the game sort of unfolded. But I was pretty biased when it came to this one. So if you listened to that, you'd think it was Brisbane by how much. But we all know the reality of the situation. Down by 4 points at full time. What a feeling.
Pretty numbing, hey?
Certainly was. You put it best when we were at the game on Saturday, that everyone in the stands was just nervous.
Yeah, goodness me, man. Like, I think I went to pee at, like, half time, and just everyone was, like, glazed over and frosted.
Yeah.
And then I think even maybe three quarters time, I don't remember, but just... everyone looks mega stressed. They made mention of that, like, pretty hard on Triple M radio. Just that everyone was super tense in all of the boxes, in all of the commentary boxes, in all of the stadium. It was a pretty weird and, like, a pretty amazing experience, all things considered. Like, I was a bit emotional when the team ran out, just because it had been such a long time to get back since 2004 for me.
Yeah.
And as the game wore on, it was just tense. Like, you know, you and I, we watch it a little bit different. We're not sort of like super yelling fans. We found a bit of voice, as is our right when you pay $1 billion for tickets. But certainly we too are the oddball fan.
Yeah, we were the just sort of stressed, silent, mutes, nerved in the back row of the ground level down the section M55. I don't think I enjoyed a single second of that game. Perhaps when Charlie kicked through that goal at the end, or Zach Bailey's like miracle goal in the first quarter, was like a moment of enjoyment. But the rest of the time, I was just a big ball of stress. And I showed you when it happened at the game, but I've never, ever in my life received an alert on my phone saying, hey, you might need to check your heart rate because it's pretty high, but I got two of those throughout the game. Considering I wasn't doing any strenuous exercise, I was sitting watching a game of football. My heart rate, the first alert was at 139, and then 10 minutes later, I got another one for 155. So yeah, that was
a good time. You showed me the 155 one, and I was like, man, the guy's going to cark it. And I was like, I feel like I'm doing all right, and lifted my finger to check my pulse and was like, oh, I am not all right either. So yeah, the feelings were not great the whole time, because it sort of felt, I don't know, it felt like we were just a little bit off it, but I suppose we'll get into that properly. It sort of just felt, even with 5 minutes to go, a couple points ahead, I was like, it just felt a little bit like we didn't have the composure that we needed to kind of close out the game the way that they would and ultimately did. And that was kind of evident by the fact that, like, you know, there were lead changes, but, like, they scored heaps off of, like, center clearance and stuff, and, or, you know, not heaps, but enough to really make it, like, every time you scored, you're like, oh, no. we got to kind of tighten up here.
Just to go back on that, clearances, I just, on the day, it felt like they were actually spanking us in the midfield. It's just the way it seemed. But in reality, we got more centre clearances, we got more clearances, slightly more stoppage clearances. But the way they used the ball out of the clearances just seemed to be so much more effective and led to score. I think they scored, ended up scoring like 5 goals from stoppage in the end, something like that. And I mean, that was a big part of why it all unfolded the way it did. But yes, unchanged in the lineup. Jack Payne apparently did everything to tick all the boxes to make sure he was right and fit to play. But having little training behind him in the lead up to the grand final, opted not to to go with him.
And it looked like Collingwood listened to Kane Corns and put Lipinski on the bench. So Lipinski was dropped to the bench. Jack Ginnivan and Frampton, who looked like he'd had a bit of watermelon. Well, that's all I got for comedic effect today. Yeah, Frampton, he had one possession and was glued to Harris Andrews all day. So they knew what they were trying to do. And I think I said to you or you to me or something, it was like if Frampton goes back when Murphy got brained, we would be in good shape. And that just never happened. They stuck fat with what they were trying to do. So full credit to them, unfortunately. Yeah, the first quarter kind of started, you know, pretty tight. It seemed like both teams, like, they settled better as a team. We didn't quite settle as well as a team, although some individuals settled fine. They got the first two through a guy that I really wouldn't want to play football anywhere near in Nick Daicos, just, like, going horizontal. I mean, it's amazing how one of the pictures of prelim final week is Toby Green getting absolutely, like, grabbed around the feckin' head, and Nick Daicos goes and gets 3 or 4 high free kicks, only one of which I think he earned properly. He's a pest. He complains, like, he gestures to the umpire. He complains. He flops. He buys high free kicks. It's like, and then you walk around the stadium and see like massive Magpie fans, like, with a new shirt with his number on it. It's like, dude, if you met this guy in the street, like, in real life, you would not like this person. But it just happens that he plays football for you. So he's so annoying. And it's not just because he plays football or because he's good. It's because I think he's, like, not good for the game, his mentality. And I think there's going to be a lot of kids that see that and emulate that. And it's really going to be bad at junior level. And it's really going to be bad with players coming into the AFL, because it's going to bring in this, like, faux bravado NBA soccer garbage. And I am not here for that. So if it was on my team, I would not like it. And when it's on another team and it's providing tangible impact, and it negates the good stuff he does, because some of his work in tight and stuff like that is really good. Then we got 3 in a row, which is great.
Yeah.
That barely kicked 2 of, like, the best goals in grand finals, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, especially that second one. And I was just reading something before we got on air here that the way he sort of found his, you know, himself that close to Mason Cox to begin with to smother that ball was maybe perhaps a little bit dubious, but regardless, one of the great goals. Even if he did run a little bit far as well, you wouldn't want to rob him of that. So, yeah, absolutely fantastic. Quintessential Zach Bailey goal as well. Like, there's only very few people that could pull off that sort of, you know, maneuverage.
Absolutely. I think with him being there next to Mason Cox, was it Will Hoskin-Elliott? I think was with him.
He was running with Quainer.
Quainer. Okay. Well, I mean, don't have a guy running past if you don't want that to happen. So that's just, like, for all of the Adam Sards out there and things like that, that's indicative that, like, that can go against you if you're trying to, like, you know, have your big ruckman hand off. So good riddance. Encroaching, no, because if the player's there, the player's there. So if it was the other way around, it's probably fair enough. But yeah, like, a pretty good start to the game, and I thought we were in pretty good stead. But we ran into our not old friend, but current enemy for this game, which is bloody goals in red time.
Yeah. Yeah, they kicked some absolutely clutch ones to go in on the quarter time crisp on the half time. And we had our chance on the three quarter time, Link lining up just before three quarter time, and and burnt that chance as well. So, you know, those, I mean, you can put this thing down to a whole bunch of moments, but I think at the end of the day, Collingwood just, they were much better all around the ground for a good portion of the day. And I mean, all you need to do is have a look at their shots on goal and the numbers there. That'll tell you what you need to know. The other thing you can probably have a look at is their tackles. Their average for the year is 64. They had 73 for the day, which was 20 more than us. Tackles inside 50, they had 13. We had 6. And they upped their average by about 4 or 5 on the day as well. So they were switched on. They stifled our ball movement. We just at no point really got our game going at all. You know, fits and bursts there, but not for extended periods of time like we can do. And, you know, we just...
Well, there's always going to be an element of going back into your shell as well on grand final day.
Yeah.
The difficulty of picking off those corridor kicks, particularly when they were just happy to clog it up. So second quarter was probably one of the greater second quarters in grand final history. 11 goals. What can you say about it, really? Like, we were 13 points ahead, and then Collingwood went and kicked the next 20 points, which is kind of game-breaking, really.
Yeah. Like,
we should have blown it open there. Really, we should have... That should have been where we took off and where we went, because I think, correct me if I'm wrong, 13 points is the highest lead of the game.
Yeah, 100%.
And it didn't last very long. And again, it was just a situation where... You know, they got out, and then was it a set shot from Danaher pulled it back to level, and then again they got one after the buzzer. So Jack Crisp really lifted at the end of that one. Bobby Hill obviously with 4 first quarter goals. Now I gotta say the mark he took over Stasevich was like, it looked okay on TV, but it looked massive. When we were there,
yeah,
like it looked huge, way, way bigger. I was like, I think I said, that's mark of the year. That's better than Himmelberg's. But it doesn't look that way on the broadcast. It looks like nowhere near as good. So I don't know if my eyes were cheating me or whatever.
I think
it's actually one of the 3 times all years I've worn my glasses. So
I think the most impressive thing about the whole thing, I mean, aside from context of just being a huge game from Bobby Hill. Like the sun was clearly in their eyes, because you can see Stas, who's just like fully discombobulated, trying to like put his hand out of some sort of sun visor. It didn't seem to bother Bobby Hill at all, who got up and took the mark. Maybe the extra elevation sort of rose him above the sun and he could see the ball clearly. But I think that just sort of added to the whole impressiveness of it.
Yeah, I wonder if that there's kind of some sort of metaphor or manifestation of the whole thing, of the idea of just going rather than checking in that sort of that game in a larger sense of, like, you know. But who knows? I'm not a poet or a writer or a knobhead, so, you know, here we are. Really good second quarter. We should have run away with it, but we didn't. And then it tightened up a little bit, really. I thought McRae coached really well, just in terms of, like, they sort of had 2 modes, Collingwood, it seemed. Like, they were able to sort of just, like, switch in between, like holding and going, like, really easily. And everyone was kind of, like, on the same page about it. So they were able to just, like, kind of dictate the pace. Sort of like what I talked about last week with Carlton and their lack of smalls or, you know, probably their plethora of talls, not allowing them to kind of change the pace of the game. Collingwood were able to slow it and, you know, quicken it when they needed to. Their senior players were just, there's an element of it being kind of not what, our most senior player in terms of like a lack of composure. So it turned into a bit of a slog in the last 2 quarters. But with like 5 minutes to go, who would have thought that there was 4 more goals in that game?
No, crazy. Especially when the last quarter itself was not underwhelming, but... you know, it was a real arm wrestle. And it's the last thing that we wanted. We, you know, you point to that 13-point lead in second quarter, and that's, you know, that's your opportunity, that if you want to beat Collingwood, you have to put a big enough gap on them and sort of take them out of the game so they haven't got the chance to control the tempo and start and stop whenever they feel like they need to be constantly chasing. But with a big enough margin, because if it's close, like, we know Collingwood win those games. And we just played into their hands too often, like, in that. Like, everyone knows if you want to... Collingwood get their scoring chains running off half-back in between, like, the centre circle and the 50 line. That's where all their attack starts from. And so if you want to negate that, you need to get the ball in deeper or kick your way through it. But time and time again, we just sort of bombs to the 50 line where we know they mop up and launch from there. And it's just like we didn't learn.
Yeah, you definitely made mention of it at the time. We weren't getting deep enough entries, and we weren't stretching their back six enough. So it made it hard, because they were just oh, this is what they do. They make it difficult to kick. Almost like you're playing one fewer kicks in your chain.
Yeah.
Like you're starting them from further back or something weird. Like, I don't know if that makes any sense, but you know, when you ordinarily would be kicking to try and go sort of like, you know, decently inside 50, you're just like 25 meters back, and you know, once Kadeen Coleman had like one of the best quarters, there was just nothing going through the middle. And I think the conditions of the day, just like we lacked run to go through, like to break through that zone, because I think, you know, we've got players that can do that, but I think with their tackle pressure or just with the way they were defending, it just wasn't happening. And that's the way you can kind of break that really brutal zone that they've got. But they weren't able to do it. I noticed on replay, and I noticed at the time, we need to figure out a better idea if we're going to be putting someone behind the ball as a spare, because if we look at it in the time it took to, you know, put someone behind the ball, we had goals kicked on us both times, and particularly the one, and I mean, Cam Rayner will want his time again with 30 seconds to go first quarter. But in the second quarter, the thing that was bad about that is we had the spare, but no one rolled back to follow Crisp.
Yeah.
So he just went into, and it's like, what? It, like, yeah, okay. Far out, hey. Like, the thing, you know, it's all well and good stacking behind the ball, but if you're just letting dudes run to around 50, if that's going to be a tactic, it needs to be a tactic. Like, I think Craig McRae has shown everybody with talking about the idea of them dictating the pace. Everyone is on the same page of knowing exactly what they need to do at any point in time, whereas just like, just swing someone back. Like, yeah, not quite. It needs to be a bit more thought out than that, I feel. But, you know, I'm not a coach, so maybe I'm wrong. And maybe it is really worked out and it just didn't work or something. I don't know. But, yeah, they're... In a game of moments, like, I feel, and I think I said this to you, it's like, I feel like we took our moments, we just had fewer of them, because the game sort of just, it just seemed like we were a little bit off. Like, I looked at the stats at halftime, and it was sort of, just about every metric, they were just a bit ahead, and checking them after the game, they're like, that same bit ahead times two, yeah. So like, nothing really changed in the second half. And I thought if we kind of just cleaned up our contest possession and our pressure and our disposal as well, like, you know, it's only 4% difference in efficiency, but that's probably a big deal. It's about 10 extra turnovers or something like that. So, yeah, definitely some players stood up and took their chance, you know, like took their moments. Some players are going to really be, I think, struggling with either a lack of impact or some poor decisions. And I don't really want to talk about it. Like, you know, we can talk about being like pissed off with Jared Berry giving away a 50 meter penalty at center clearance. But, you know, although my brothers found it funny that I've always got an answer to everything, Nick Dacos has Bailey around the neck, or, you know, has his jumper around the neck at that center bounce. It doesn't get called. So there are things, there's probably umpire things that went both ways. And yeah, some players that lacked a bit of impact that will think about this a lot, and will kind of wonder where to go and whether they're players to go forward with. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think the players you're probably speaking of, the guys that sort of didn't have a huge impact, they're all sort of not really droppable either. Like, Motti had a mare. Rayner had, you know, a really quiet game by his standards when... Yeah, I don't know if like extra pressure was on him heading into finals, because you're like, yeah, this is the guy that's built for finals. You know, we've seen what Jordan Dugowie's doing. Like, you know, we need that sort of same level impact from Cam Rayner. It just wasn't there. It was there for the first final against Port, but then the game against Carlton, and of course on the weekend, he was definitely quiet. Hipwood had probably, he had some moments, but one of his quieter games as well. Zorko was uncharacteristically quite bad and quite poor with his kicking. Yeah, there's a few, there's sort of five or six. There's just too many passengers for the day.
Yeah, and Jared Berry kind of brought his intensity up when he realised that he'd kind of cooked a few things, because he gave away a few free kicks, two 50-metre penalties. I mean, I'm still a bit on the fence about that one. It's dumb, and it's kind of, I think I've said it before, it's like, why make the umpire make a decision? And yeah, who would have thought Steel side bottom in game 7003 would just like launch one from 55, so. Yeah,
I'm really trying to put it all in a box and sort of not really think about all the little moments or umpiring decisions that could have, would have, should have been, because I think, like I said, at the end of the day, they were just better. And it could have been worse, looking at like the scoring shots, especially in the first half. They, you know, it was a few that hit the post or just bounced the other side of the post, like that McCreary one that was coming in from outside 50. Like, I think by the end of the game, we were lucky to be as close as we were, because we were, you know, uncharacteristically quite accurate on goal, especially in the first half. I think we kicked five or six straight before we finally hit it behind, which was quite strange for us, but it was the only thing keeping us within arm's length at that time.
Yeah, it's a bit of a false economy, but like, it kept us in the game, and like, it's I think I said it, like, I think we were probably like more in that game than we deserved to be, which kind of made it a little bit like, you know, even more heartbreaking, all things considered. But like, at the same time, us from last year are nowhere near that close at the end of the game.
Yeah, you're
like,
right.
Like, nowhere near. We get absolutely like boiled out of the water. And we fold. And like, it just sucks that it's so far back.
That's the hardest bit, I think, I've found after this whole experience, is like, it's another 12 months, it's another 24 rounds of home and away season plus finals. Like, Fags said it before the finals, like, we're not going to have a better chance. Two home finals to lead ourselves into the grand final. We've got to do all of that again if we want to give ourselves another shout. And like, you're walking off that field, have you got it in you to go through all of that again to give it another tilt? I mean, you hope so. You hope that they take the weekend and use it as extra motivation. Like, the end of the game, you see Dev, Kitty lying on the ground, like, motionless for however long. Harris Andrews was just standing in the 50 all by himself, looking out at the stands. Like, I don't know what's going through his head. Maybe he's just looking at all the Collingwood supporters cheering and just going, yeah, like, I want this to be us, or whether he's just, you know, glazed over, not believing what he's seen. So, you know, there'll be players that use this motivation. There'll be players that sort of go, oh man, this is heartbreak. I can't do it all again. So it's going to be a very long off season. And for some, it's going to be even longer.
Yeah, I think it sucked, because if we win, you imagine all those Collingwood fans like get out, and then like the Lions fans, who were pretty epic, get to have a moment with the team. My partner brought something up where she said, like, imagine dropping like an English dude into this and being like, whoa, your fans sit shoulder to shoulder in the stands.
Yeah.
Like, that is unheard of in Britain or whatever. And it got me thinking, like, at least with that, as bad as a performance or as heartbreaking or crushing a performance as it is, there's a pocket of away fans that the losing team or whatever, and we were definitely the away fans in this, the team will always go to them. And they weren't able to do that because, you know, they're not going around the MCG.
Yeah.
And there's just like a part that's just like, oh man, like, you just want to be like, it's okay, don't worry. Like, we're upset, but we're not like disowning you or whatever. Like, that's sort of how I felt. And I said to my brother, like, he sort of was like, ah, you're right. Because, you know, I've copped a fair bit of shit over the last 20 years or whatever, because I've not seen a winning flag. been a bit of a kind of running joke. And I think they sort of knew that it probably wasn't funny. Also, because they were probably not having a great time either. So, and I said, yeah, like, you know, you and I just, we just sort of sat there and we watched the presentation. We listened to Harris. We listened to Moore. We watched them all get their medals. And I was just like, well, I'm trying to soak this in because I want the team to soak it in and realize that it sucks. Like, it's not, like, you don't want this to happen. You want to be on the other side of it. And it's sort of eerily similar to what Harris said in his post game, where he's like, you know, they need to take this on board and like be better, basically. So I think Harris conducted himself so well for someone that probably did not want a bar of it.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, we've come to know that from Harris, and that's the sort of, that's the sort of stuff that gets you elected as captain and why we sort of seen him as an heir apparent for a few years, because of the way he does carry himself in those, in all situations, but especially those situations. And yeah, it must be tough to jump in front of a microphone and address 100,000 people, most of them Collingwood fans, after that, but someone's got to do it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the only things I remember from 2004 was Michael Voss giving that same speech and just getting booed out of the stadium, basically. And I'm glad that didn't happen.
Like the show? Make sure to follow and subscribe on your favourite podcast platforms.
I had a thought. When Collingwood were coming out, and I saw Darcy Moore's face, I knew we were possibly in a bit of trouble, because they looked like it was no different.
Yeah.
Yeah, that scared me.
Yeah, there was a bit of chat about that in the lead up. Like, obviously, everyone saw his face in the walk out to the prelim, just like big smile on his face walking out to a packed MCG and again this week. And like, people spoke about the Richmond Adelaide Grand Final 2017 and the way Adelaide sort of did the power stance and their footy photo at the start's all serious, and you look at the Richmond guys and they're all smiling and things like that, and Collingwood were very much like that. I don't know that we were necessarily super uptight, but I think the occasion sort of did get in the heads of a lot of the players, as I guess a lot of us feared it would, because we've been known to get a bit scared on the big occasion, whether it be, you know, in the past, it's been a Friday night primetime game against a big Victorian club or something like that. We've sort of managed to deal with those aspects a little bit better, but the grand final's obviously a whole different kettle of fish that we didn't quite handle. Like, our ball use at the start was so nervy. You could see it, like, little drop marks, little chip kicks that weren't quite hitting the target, that sort of stuff. We did settle into it a little bit later as the game wore on, but it was sort of too little, too late. We could never get our game going. And yeah, as you said, Collingwood just sort of adapted and were so much more composed in key areas than we ever were.
What did you make of the kits or the Guernseys? Like, it's the first time this year that we've obviously worn the maroon with the white.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind. Like, I've got good memories of that, I suppose.
I'm not a super superstitious person, but it's kind of like, that's not our uniform ever, like it used to be,
yeah,
back in the day. But then you also wonder why in 2002 and 2003 Collingwood were wearing their black with black shorts and we were wearing a full maroon strip. I just checked it then just to make sure, but like, it just seems weird, like, because I think in both of those games, or at least the first one, we went in as the higher ranked team, home team.
Yep.
So why were they not wearing white shorts? I don't know. You know, just little things. And I suppose them being the higher finishing team gets you to do that. You know, they get to run out second. They got to warm up majority in the shade. They got to stand a bit in the shade during the national anthems, whereas we were just in the blazing sun the whole time. So, you know, if it was me, I'd be wearing a red Fitzroy shirt. And I know probably marketing states you shouldn't do that or whatever, but wear your away kit as you all know it.
Yeah, I mean, I think people blaming umpiring decisions and all sorts of stuff, I find to be quite a bit reaching. I think,
but I'm reaching even further.
Yeah, that is reaching.
Kit decision.
I mean, honestly,
I don't know, man.
I could spend like 6 hours picking apart little decisions here and there that, you know, if that had gone a slightly different way, then maybe things are different. But I think I'll just drive myself insane if I do that.
Or the wrong shoes. didn't have a shave, etc. I don't know. Who cares? Yeah. For everything that someone did or didn't do that they're like beating themselves up about in a superstition way, someone else did the other way around and someone else didn't do the other way around. So none of it matters anyway. So
there was, I don't know if you caught this, and it's the first time I'd ever heard of it this year, in fact, was that the pre-match, like after the parade and they do the press conferences and the photo of the two captains holding the cup up, there's this, like, the last captain to touch the cup wins or something like that. I'm not sure. Like, this is falling into that superstition thing. And, you know, there's a slow-mo down vision of the two putting the cup down back on the podium, and then Darcy Moore just gives it a little touch on the way. So he gets technically the last touch of the cup or something like that. And yeah, maybe that's it as well, you know?
Could be. That's a bit of... I was expecting some more, like, WWE style, like, fighting over the cup sort of thing, and just, like, a, you know, it's a bit more tug-of-war happening, like they do with the belt occasionally. But also, we didn't get... We had a Lions fan who was doing the coin toss, and he did not give Darcy Moore a massive corky. So, thank you, knobhead. You didn't take my advice. You should have done it, and it would have helped. Because imagine them without Moore and Murphy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's come out sort of in the last 24 hours that Murphy actually passed his concussion test but had a bit of blurry vision, so ruled himself out. So there's that. So I guess if that's all true, then he's done the right thing by his team and his teammates there. So, yeah, we had Archie got subbed out throughout the game.
He looked a little bit proppy at one point in time, but he kind of tends to do that at some point in time, I guess. Yeah, I mean, with the list going forward, it's tough because we've kind of struggled with the difference between our 22 and 23. That sub has been kind of a thorn in our side throughout the season. With what to do, a lack of impact, who to have, whether it's a steadying thing. You know, I honestly can't see JL being the sub too many times, if at all.
Yeah.
And just with, you know, with players like Dev Robb, we saw Jackson Pryor run like a maniac to second place in the grand final sprint, you know, albeit he was about 7 meters behind Max Holmes, but he was a meter ahead of everyone else.
Yeah, so, which is crazy.
We're not in a position where we can kind of, we don't have a great deal of chips on the table to be able to trade players, to be able to draft at the moment, because correct me if I'm wrong, but we basically don't have any draft picks this year because we use, I think, some futures on the Ashcroft and Fletcher, and then I think it was a future first rounder for Dunkley. And then we're going to be needing draft picks for Levi Ashcroft the following year. So list management is in a bit of a tenuous place. And if you've got players that have, that, you know, I'd say AFL quality like Pryor and like Dev, that there's a chance they might leave. You know, we don't know. I wouldn't have Zorko go around again. I know I've been sort of saying it off and on throughout the year, and I think that'll probably be unpopular, but like, you don't want to be in a position that we were in with Daniel Rich this year with Zorko next year. But at the same time, I don't really want that to be Zorko's last game because it wasn't very good.
Yeah, I think they'll probably throw a 1 year at him. But if we're re-signing Zorko and that is the deciding factor behind not getting Dev over the line or Pryor or both, then yeah, I'm moving Zorks on.
Yeah, I mean, like, other players that can kind of impact the 22 going forward is sort of like Answorth could, like, he really didn't even really feature this year. I mean, a couple of times, but nothing that really sticks in the memory. And he was a bolt on 22 a few years ago.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's been spending more time in the mids. Maybe he's the sort of person that would have been a good matchup for Bobby Hill, possibly. A bit of ground speed, a bit of lateral movement. I don't know, because we struggle with Bobby Hill, obviously.
Yes.
And at the time, we thought Stasevich was being given an absolute bath, but it turns out that Stasevich didn't even seem to really go to him until the third quarter when Bobby Hill, Stas had a lot of the ball. You know, there was a rundown tackle. They traded holding the balls. Stasevich got a good mark, but then Bobby Hill kind of had a few shots and set up a goal. So I don't know, but in that first half, it just seemed like it didn't matter who he was on because he kicked the goal on, firstly, no one, then on Coleman, then on Leicester, then on Stasevich over his head. So That's a troublesome matchup, and the sort of one where you kind of expect the other way around of like, oh, well, they haven't got a matchup for Cameron, but they did reasonably well to hold Cameron between Maynard and Quaynor. Like,
yeah.
But I mean, I don't, it's difficult to kind of go through the blow by blow with them because it's just, you know, players did good things and other players did good things at other times. I think a big game breaker for them, particularly in the second half, was Jack Crisp. You said Pendlebury, and Pendlebury had a massive last quarter. And for me, like, if we're looking at Zorko, like the prototype of what Pendlebury did in the last quarter, which was sort of 11 disposals, he barely wasted the ball. He made really good decisions, and just Zorko was kind of munging the ball the whole day, trying to play quick. It was like foolishly quick.
Yeah.
And it wasn't exactly, you know, he wasn't taking off kind of corridor kicks as well. But he was just kind of going quick down the line before we'd set up and before they'd set up, but they just had more guys. So I don't know. For me, that was one of the things that kind of was a bit shit about the day. It was just Zorko's game.
Well, that's normally what people like about Zorko, his quick decision making and his ball use. But it's like he tried too hard to maximize that throughout the game. He played on without ever looking. Then he was forced into making a decision. And then, you know, against lesser teams, we've got players out, but we just didn't have the players out. He kicked two out on the full. Yeah, it certainly wasn't his best day. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, what can you do, I suppose? McCluggage stood up really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, sunk a set shot, good snap. Kind of some wizardry on the boundary line there as well.
Make sure you follow us on socials. Just search for BL Fancast.
Did you do votes? I suppose we've got to do votes a little bit.
Yeah.
Did you think about it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, or is that I didn't, but let's pretend I did?
No, I did. I was thinking about it yesterday, and you know, I think I've got my five, but you know, I'm not overly happy with the votes this week because, I mean, if you look at it...
Did you want me to shoot first in a duel and do my five just so you don't feel as bad when you're going through yours?
Yeah, sure, go for it.
I got Coleman at five, yep. Clug at four, Danaher at three, Bailey at two, and Dev Rob at one.
Yeah, okay. Very similar. I had Kitty at five, Clug at four, Dunkley at three, Danaher at two, and Bailey at one.
Very nice.
Yeah, so I thought Dunks, actually, he had a good game. He had his work cut out for him all day. So he was sort of rotating between, like, he started on Dugowie, he had moments on Nick Dacos, he played a bit of time on Pendles as well, and, you know, and then, of course, on the other side, Tom Mitchell was, he had a good game as well for Collingwood. He ended up with 13 tackles, and he had quite a big impact with the ball as well. So, yeah, I thought Dunks fought hard all day and did everything he could with Clug in the middle. But, yeah, Kitty's put together quite a good final series. So, you know, good signs for the future.
Yeah, I got to admit, I was a bit worried with his issues with cramping.
Yeah.
But, oh, man, get that guy eating salt now. But, no, he's been fantastic and probably wins the Paddy.
Yeah, I mean, I'll collect the votes before our next episode, but I would say...
Have to be between him and Clug, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. Those would be the two. I would say Kitty, I mean, he's racked up 19 votes in the last 2 weeks.
I think Kitty wins by a vote because I think Clug got 18.
Well, there you go. I can't remember week one. I think Clug pulled a few in week one.
Clug got the 10, yeah. I think, in week one. Unless, yeah. So, yeah. Coleman 19, Clug 18, and some jerk after. Fantastic. Well done, Kadeem Coleman.
We've
announced yourself to the
yeah, 100%
competition in a way that we knew beforehand. It's interesting, like, yeah, interesting to hear people say, oh, you know, he's come in and he's replaced Daniel Rich, and it was like, nah, he didn't. Like, he was in the team with him. Funnily enough, it was McKenna that ultimately plays Daniel Rich, but neither here nor there.
I think they're just like, oh, left foot, good kick, he must be Daniel Rich. There's not a whole lot of thought other than that going into it.
Speaking of Daniel Rich, he absolutely monstered a Tory almost across the Yarra.
Yeah, first time I've ever seen Daniel Rich get a hold of a Tory because he's never really needed one, especially on game day. I suppose if that's his last footy act in the world of the AFL, then sure, that's a rare win for him over the last few months.
Yeah, that was good. Him and Fev duking it out is really shades of 2010, so or 2009 probably, duking it out.
Yeah.
And yeah, aside from that, the little matter earlier on in the week of Lachie Neale winning the Brownlow, which now let's all kind of like cool our jets here of people saying, oh, you know, nice job previewing the Brownlow boys. It's like there's no way that people thought he was gonna win. Like, you know, I know, and then people be like, well, the Brownlow predictor had him, but 32 votes. It's like, yeah, but nah, he was as surprised as we were.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy for him because, you know, people can talk all they want about the Brownlow and how sort of the award kind of functionally doesn't make a great deal of sense.
Yeah.
He won it within the metrics that all the other players are playing anyway. So, you know. Bont, if you want to win the Brownlow, have your team win more games because you win more votes if you win more games.
That is a big part of it. That is a big part of it.
And Dacos, if you want to win the Brownlow, don't get injured.
Yeah, that's...
Like, that's the reality of it.
That's what cost
him. And Zach Butters, if you want to win it, be better than Rosie more often.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult. I mean... Next year, Neil won't win it because Dunkley will get a billion votes and it'll be, you know. But, you know, Neil should be a three-time Brownlow medalist because, what, they didn't win it last year because someone said the wrong word in the tribunal. Yeah, get out of here.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine him being a three-timer. Like, it does make up for last year a little bit. And we said it. He said it in his speech. He wasn't expecting it. I said he was a smoky... and maybe like top five, but I didn't think he was going to walk away with the win. I didn't even watch the Brownlow because I thought, eh, you know, it was
a good count.
Goes for
it. It was a good count. I think Sheasel got two votes and Ashcroft got about eight, so sucked in Sheasel.
Danaher actually polled quite well as well, which was good to see.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is like we didn't have another midfielder that was polling well, and the people that were like, in inverted commas, taking votes off of Lockie were ones that were doing it in a different way where he probably wouldn't have got votes anyway. So when you got, you know, Cameron or Danaher polling votes from really being game-changing in terms of their, you know, their forward half impact, it wasn't like you didn't have your, you know, Jack Viney in there like just stealing votes or whatever, Liberatore. So it was really a perfect storm for him to win that, and he did. So... well done to Lachie Neale. He's got two Brownlows to go with his two pretty birds.
And now he's two failed grand finals as well, which I'm sure if he had his choice would be the opposite way around.
He really brought down... I was trying to bring a bit of positivity into the back end of this thing. Ashcroft won Gold of the Year, as he should have, and if he didn't, I'm sure someone would have blown up.
I mean, I think we all thought it was probably the best, flukiest goal. There's stuff to be said for, I guess, skill levels and clutch moments and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, as far as freakish goals, I don't think we'll see one on that level for a while. That's for sure.
Good save. I go freakish rather than flukiest because, I mean, fluky for me are ones that bounce. Freakish for me are the ones that are, you know, all the intent in the world is there. It just went through. So, yeah, fantastic stuff. So... I guess in terms of the season, disappointing, but the team has grown.
Yeah, I think at the start of the year, a lot of people, including myself, said that the grand final was the pass mark for the Lions this year after appearing in the last, what, four or five final series and not really...
What an absolutely shit pass mark.
I know.
Have fun being heartbroken for 6 months.
Yep. But I mean, do you reckon you'd feel worse if we had a failed in another prelim and just got like blown out?
That's a hypothetical question.
Yeah.
Don't answer hypothetical questions.
Because I think I probably would. Bad. Yeah, I think I probably would have ended up feeling worse if last week at the Gabba we got blown out by Carlton in that first quarter and it just stayed that way.
Well, let's be brutally honest here, like. any level of not winning the premiership was going to suck.
Yeah.
Basically. And I think the cold realization of the two Geelong preliminaries have just been like, because we've been absolutely mauled in both of those, there was an element of like the grieving process had finished by like full time. I think like the first Geelong preliminary, I was like cleaning my room by the last quarter. I was like, nah, screw this. I'm going to tidy up my desk.
Sure.
And, you know, last year was sort of like, oh, well, this sucks. Yeah, they all, I mean, I've kind of just gone entirely against my evidence there, but I think the amount of intention in the back half of the year really kind of dictated that it was going to hurt any which way the cookie fell or crumbled, as they say, the iron fell, the cookie crumbled.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting 6 months. I sort of don't know what to do with myself now. Yeah.
Well, I went and checked my Premier League club and it was like, injury crisis. And I was like, oh, cool. That's great.
Get in touch anytime. Shoot us an email at blfancast@gmail.com or join the Discord.
Oh man, the Broncos. Did you hear about that?
No, I watched that last night as well. I thought, you know, hopefully Brisbane can win something. And for about 15 minutes in the second half where Ezra Mann put on 3 tries in quick succession, you're like, oh, Jesus. And then Nathan Cleary just decided to go super sane and become the best league player in the world and pulled Penrith over the line for a three-peat. So it was actually, you know, I got the appreciation of watching a great grand final as a neutral, even though I was like going for the Broncos. It was a fantastic grand final, but I can only imagine how Broncos fans are feeling today. And you know, I can't imagine. I know how Broncos fans are feeling today.
Yeah, I mean, I think I checked the score and it was 24-8.
Yep.
And then, I got new people living next door that seem to be rugby fans, and there was a bit of boisterousity going on there, boisterousness. And then I checked and was like, whoa. Well, I'm not obviously a rugby league fan at all, so probably a bit of a wrap.
Yeah, well, we will do at least one more episode in the near future. We'll do a bit of a season review and go through, I don't know if we want to go through like game by game or player by player or how we're going to sort of facilitate that, but we will do that. If the demand is there for it, I might put out a poll on social media to see if people want like a quick podcast each week about the AFLW. I mean, you don't have to come along to that one if you don't want, if you've got nothing to add, but I'm...
Stop throwing me under the bus.
I'm happy to do a 15-20 minute job each week if people are keen to hear about the women, which, by the way, big win for those guys on the Sunday against the Hawks, which was quite good. The Hawks got off to a fairly early lead, but then the Lions pegged it back in a huge second half, ended up winning by 20-30 points, which was bloody fantastic for those, especially against the Hawks, who poached Greta Bodhi and Emily Bates. And, I mean, to a lesser extent, Kate Ashmore's in that team as well, who started off with the Lions. But, yeah, big win for those guys. So, happy to cover that in a little bit more depth because I will be watching if the demand is there for it. Or if it's not, I'm happy to not as well. So, but, yeah, we will do a season review and then maybe something after trade and draft period as well, if there's anything, you know, worth talking about after that whole experience.
Yeah, I think we'll just sort of wait and see what happens with exit meetings and just if, you know, if there's anyone that decides not to go on or anything like that, or get any more retirements or any delistings or things. So it might be a few weeks away just to let the dust settle because, yeah, there hasn't been a level of catharsis from this talkie show as I would have liked today.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still sort of, I don't know, maybe I'm just putting off dealing with it. Like I said, I boxed it up and I've been trying not to think about it and trying not to zone in on moments. Every time I go on social media, it just makes me super agitated just seeing, like, it's weird because at the game there was maybe one or two obnoxious people at the end that were just enjoying the win the way they knew how, and fair enough. But at the game, like, all Collingwood supporters that I came across were pretty level-headed, pretty pragmatic and quite nice, and, you know, like, we're happy to say it was a good game, and you know, bad luck and all that sort of stuff. But social media is a different beast, and there's just some people that feel the need to be insulting and arrogant and obnoxious. And it's like, why? Just enjoy your win and go away.
Yeah, people just look to antagonize, I guess. And I certainly have stayed away from the Reddit and, you know, largely everything else, because it's not going to change anything. So, yeah. And I don't really have, like, I don't have a vitriolic opinion. Sure, you're disappointed, but also, like, I feel like I can articulate my opinion on things here better than I can through, like, that advantage was bullshit. It's like, it was, but, I mean, what can you do about it now? So, let's not think about that.
Yeah, you're right there, and, yeah, like
I said. But also, sorry, I was going to say, you might have compartmentalized things and put it in a box. I've confronted them, and I don't feel any better. So,
well, there you go.
We've got the two dealings with of grief, I guess. Probably not as heavy as grief. Two dealing with of emotion, and neither of them are good. So if you've got any ideas out there, please let me know.
Well, here's something to bring us up a little bit. We ran into Craig Lambert on the way out of the MCG, so that was a bit of fun.
Yeah, but he was depressed as shit.
Yeah.
So, albeit it was fun, but he was like, oh, man, I really love these guys these days, and that one really hurt. It's like, oh, man.
People may have seen on Twitter and Instagram that, you know, I just wanted to say a big shout-out to everyone that has listened to the show throughout the season. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's something I've looked forward to most weeks. I'll say that. I mean, obviously some weeks I haven't exactly been like, oh, cool, can't wait to talk about that game again. You know, the Suns, the Hawks, and maybe even this one. But it's been great. You know, when we started this, I thought, you know, if we get 50 or 100 people listening, it'd be worth it. But as I said, the last couple of episodes have pulled in over 1,000. So it's been a whole lot better than I ever thought. So a big shout out to everyone that's listened in, whether it be each week, every now and then, or just the odd episode here and there. It's been good fun.
Yeah, and we'll be back. If you got any suggestions for things that you might like to hear about or whatever, obviously keeping within topic, because I feel we were talking nostalgic players probably run its course because I just can't remember any other ones. So we'll try and think of another kind of light segment to end the thing on. So if anyone's got any ideas.
We did have... now, this is going back quite a bit. I got a message from Ziggy a couple of weeks ago. He had a...
Get this one under the pillow, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I remember reading it at the time going, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I'll bring that to Pat. And then I completely forgot about it. Then checked my messages again the other day. I was like, all right, make sure you do that this time. So Ziggy had a suggestion for votes for next year. They should definitely have an award for the best defender, MVP, and a most improved player. Having a spot for forward seems silly since it's just our highest goal scorer and best midfielder is most likely just the MVP. AKA Lockie Neal for this year. He then said there should be what he is calling the Lionheart Trophy for someone who embodies the Lions or sort of embodies the campaign the most, the uncaged, the all for one sort of thing. And he sort of put Daniel Rich forward for this year. So there's some suggestions to move forward there. But, you know, we could do, as we sort of put out there, I think briefly, it's like a vote for each line. You know,
yeah,
defender,
that's good.
Midfielder,
good
forward,
idea.
And moving forward. But yeah, we'll sort of workshop that in the off season and see what we come back with.
I can give you answers to all of those. You know,
all right, go for it.
Well, I go Harris best defender, Jack Payne most improved, Einhart, Dev Rob with his shirt off.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Dev Rob with his shirt off. Having said that, his last two finals. He did some really good
bits. He's not winning that award based on anything other than just like him looking like a lion with his shirt off. So let's not try and don't like put this in a box of actually that being the answer. It's not.
His last two finals.
That's the only one I didn't think about.
His little 1%ers on the weekend and the week before were actually really helpful. And you can see the value that he brings and he does give it his all. So hoping that he will decide to stick around with the Lions, but that remains to be seen, and we'll obviously address that in the coming episodes once we make some sort of list changes.
Beautiful stuff. Well, you don't have to have that in the episode. You can just cut that off.
Yeah, might as well put it in there.
But I do want to leave you on one thing. You little beauty!